Welcome to the Becoming Superhuman podcast. My name is Dr. Nirvani Umadat. I've spent years working as a dentist and researcher. I've traveled all over the world, and I've built a business that has allowed me to help thousands of people. I've studied conventional, ancient, and spiritual sciences. And through these studies, I've realized merging science with spirituality is necessary for us to understand who we are. I'm here to help you up-level your life, mind, body, soul, and become your own version of superhuman. I am so excited and honored to welcome you, Dr. Stephanie Davis, to the Becoming Superhuman podcast. And with almost 20 years of experience in the functional medicine realm and working with patients to heal themselves in many ways, using many modalities, you just have such an extensive amount of experience and knowledge. And I am so excited to dive more deeply into all that you've been a part of in your practice. So if you wouldn't mind giving a little bit of a background about your history and your work and how it's progressed over time, I would love to hear that.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for having me. I was super, super excited when we got connected because I get I've been wanting to talk to a holistic dentist, but also your whole history is amazing too. So I was we think very like-mindedly and I appreciate that. So I ended up wanting to be a doctor my whole life, and I totally thought I would end up being in conventional medicine in some realm. I thought for a long time I wanted to be a cardiologist, which I can kind of tag back to that later. It's very interesting because so much of the work I do does center around the heart, and I am not, I'm not a cardiologist, obviously. I ended up going into functional medicine because I found that so much of what, the chronic illnesses that people have, they are so much a byproduct of lifestyle. And that's kind of how I got into functional medicine because I had hormone issues. And that, I was 22 years old and the doctor's you're going to have to be on birth control and migraine meds for the rest of your life. And I'm there's no way. I'm I have, I had cyclical migraines. And I was how can I see that there's a pattern here and you're not seeing it? I mean, that was so long ago. And it's funny because now obviously it's something clear that we recognize, but it started me off down the path of trying to heal myself. And so I went to acupuncture and we did herbs and I changed my diet. And that really did fix my overall health. Not only did it address the migraines and I had horrible cycles. I had all of the symptoms, I had mood related stuff. I had pain, I had cramping, I had heavy flow. I had all of the things, but all of it resolved when I changed my diet and added in, the herbs and whatnot. And I stayed on the herbs for a short period of time because everything eventually normalized. And I was there's something to this. And that's kind of when I started digging, I was digging into the world of functional medicine. And at that time, it was Andrew Weil and integrative medicine. And then, I started down my own path. I went back to school. So, in functional medicine back then, you had to have a terminal health care degree. So you had to be an MD, a DO, a DC, which I am, or a nurse practitioner, or actually, I don't even know if nurse practitioners back then, they could do it. That was something that they added on, physician assistants, nurse practitioners, naturopaths. You had to have some kind of terminal health care degree back in the day. And so I did that. And then I got out and I was practicing for a while. And then a few things started happening that came into my awareness. One was the patients who I saw that really did the work. They were either doing some kind of therapy, like it would, a few of them, it was talk therapy, but some other ones, they were doing some really cool stuff. Like back in the day, that was like EMDR. That was like the first time I had heard about EMDR. And then some of them were doing even more like deeper work, like spiritual work. And I want to say it was even back then, it was like Joe Dispenza, stuff like that. And so it really piqued my interest. And I'm like, why are these people, you know, all of a sudden when they started doing that work, it was like the needle, instead of just moving a little bit, moved a lot. And they were the ones who were having like this vibrant, amazing health and great outcomes versus the traditional functional medicine patient. It's like they feel better on labs, you know, their lab work got better, but it's like they weren't vibrant and they weren't thriving. And I'm like, what's going on here? And then on my own journey, I realized that, you know, I was in that same spot too. I was, you know, feeling good, but I wanted to feel amazing. Like, you know, kind of like Joe Dispenza is becoming superhuman, right? That's, you know, kind of how I wanted to be in that realm. And so then I started looking at my own health and my own past issues and the context of that, like from the emotional and also spiritual side too. And so then I started off down that path too. And, you know, I did talk therapy and I did EMDR and I did, tapping, you know, EFT. I did emotional freedom technique. I did some meditation programs, read a lot about Joe Dispenza. I was in some of his groups, started off down that pathway. But then for me, it wasn't until I started, I was a patient first and then became a practitioner in the realm of HMT, which is holographic manipulation therapy. And that is one of the main modalities I use. But for me, it was the one that like it really moved the needle, because we're not just working on emotions, but we're really trying to resolve like root cause trauma. Like we call it the initial sensitizing event. When was the very first, you know, second when this trauma seed was planted, you know, in your body, somewhere where you can feel it. But then also the connection to the divine, you know, that whole like everything that Joe Dispenza talks about too. Like that's, we address all of those things. And when I did that, that's when my health, like I had, you know, I don't ever say I have Lyme. I was diagnosed with Lyme. I do not identify with that label. You know, Lyme, right. I've also Hashimoto's. I don't have antibodies anymore. Like all of those things. It's like I've moved away from, you know, the diagnosis as a label, but more as a tool to help us see what's going on. Because when you identify with those labels, that really can hinder your healing experience. And it was like, once I moved past all of that, it was like, you know, the opportunities are endless for, you know, healing and feeling amazing.
Wow. That was amazing. That was an amazing answer. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I mean, I'd like to dive into a few things that you said, because sure, there's a lot in that. That was awesome. But you said something really important, which, just for me, it resonated so much, in that, you know, you were noticing patients who were getting better technically, like their labs were coming back and they were better, but they weren't vibrant. They didn't have that energy and that vitality that you would hope people would walk out with. And there is something so different between those two things, like clinically seeing success versus, you know, realistically seeing success. And, you know, success, I guess, in this case, just being a really vital energy force coming through a person. Yeah. And it sounds like when you started to incorporate more of these energetic, you know, emotional, energy, spiritually based practices, you noticed that more in people, and the people doing that work seemed to give you that feedback as well. Yeah. So is there, you mentioned HMT. Do you mind going into that a little bit more and just talking about what that is and how that works to really access those parts of us?
Absolutely. So The main thing we're doing, the main focus we're going after is the subconscious mind. And so I always tell people, there's certain layers that we have to overcome. We have to overcome, first of all, your reptilian brain, which is that part of your brain, one of the oldest parts of your brain, that really just wants you to survive. You know, it's you know, really focused around food, sex, you know, survival, you know, finding shelter, all of the things. Also, sensing for danger. Like those were the things that kept us surviving for hundreds of thousands of years. And so that's deeply implanted in us. And so we're up against that, because when you want to change, you have, it's called your critical faculty. And your critical faculty is, it's kind of, it's so funny because my brain always goes back to very often scientific things, but it's like in chemistry, when you learn about chemistry and biology, you know, you learn about semipermeable membranes and how those selectively only let certain things through. And so that's exactly what is happening here. It's like your critical faculty is really only letting in things that match it. So if you, that's where I was talking about the identity, if you identify mm-hmm. with Lyme disease and Epstein-Barr virus and mold toxicity and Hashimoto's and celiac and all of the diagnoses, if you say, oh, hey, I want to change, it's not going to work like that. It's not going to happen overnight. You need to actually change your identity so that things will come into your subconscious early and easy. And so that's something that we work on a lot. A lot of it is accessing the subconscious mind to affect the change. And so I do that in a number of ways. So I usually start off with, like we mentioned HMT, but I usually start off with heart math. Heart math is something that Joe Dispenza actually talks a lot about, because he worked with the Heart Math Institute to, you know, establish like that heart-brain coherence. And that's what we start off doing. We get your body into a coherent state. And it's a little bit, basically what happens, it gets you out of your kind of conscious and thinking mind and a little bit more into like theta state, a calmer state where your body is more just relaxed and open to suggestion more. And so that's part of what we're trying to do. And it also increases oxytocin. So it's increasing your neuroplasticity, your brain's kind of like ability to learn and be creative. That's all going to happen there. So that's what we start off doing. We do a little bit of breath work. We do some heart math and like essentially like heart-brain connection. And then we start going down the HMT path. And that's where we establish a safe space first, because I don't know how many of your listeners have done any emotional work or trauma work, or even some of the modalities in the energetic realm. But sometimes when these big issues come up, they don't feel good. And it makes people want to do lots of different things. You kind of emotionally want to run away from it, or you feel like you want to go out of your body. And that we having that safe space really anchors you in. So we start off in this safe space. And then we can also, if we're in the process and you're feeling like not good at all, we can go back to that safe space too. So anchoring ourselves in safety is huge. And then we go down the path of doing the work. And what that typically looks like is we do, you know, we'll do kind of their less intense kind of procedures first, to, again, increase that neuroplasticity and just make sure that your body is receptive to what's happening. Then we go after the feelings, the body feelings, because we know that all of these events, these traumatic events, are stored in our bodies, you know, somewhere. That's why, you know, the words are powerful. It's like you say, I have a gut feeling, or I feel the weight of the world on my shoulders. So often that's where people are going. They're pointing to their shoulders. When I usually ask the question, where in your body do you feel that? You know, so it's like, we're pointing to the shoulders. We're pointing to the abdomen, anywhere, really. We're going after where this feeling is, whether you know what it is, and you don't have to know. Like, you could say, for instance, let's use an example. Say you were somebody who was physically abused as a child, and you don't remember all of the details of it because you put it out of your mind so you could survive. And so if somebody comes to me and says, hey, I want to work on this, we can just talk about that in and of itself. Like I could have the person, recall, like when I mention, you know, being physically abused, where do you feel it in your body? So they could point anywhere. And then we go after that body feeling. And so it's really, yeah, it's really interesting. But some people will also come in and say, I was beat every day from the ages of like 5 to 7. So you could have a very specific experience or, you know, no recollection of this experience at all. And we can still do the same work because we're going after those body feelings. Because I don't know how much you've kind of dove into the realm of, how trauma is stored and passed on, but trauma is literally passed on in our DNA. They know that there is a change at the kind of molecular and structural level when people experience trauma. And that goes change, you know, passes on from generation to generation. There are also chemical changes that happen. There's physiological changes that happen to your brain and anatomical, like your brain structure will change as well. And so that all of that is passed on. So we can access, you know, all of these things. And then obviously when you experience those things yourself, those same things happen. Those same things are happening. So those are the things we're going after. And then, like I said, we do some more, we call them deletions, holographic deletions. Those are, you know, you point at something, we see if there is a lesson associated with it, and then it's something that we might either save for the future or we get rid of it. So that's the kind of the first step. But then the main kind of where the magic really is doing regressions. And that's where we actually go back to that event. Ideally, we're going to what I said before, the initial sensitizing event. So that could be for a lot of people, you know, we know that ages 0 to 5 years old are where the vast majority of our traumas and, you know, emotional situations occur. And a lot of it is when you don't have words too. So again, going after the, where those body feelings are stored is really, really important. But for so many people, it's really interesting. The initial trauma or that very first trauma may have happened at conception. Like if your mom mm-hmm. and dad, when they found out they were pregnant, if it was a surprise, it may be like their first thought may have been, you know, I don't know how I'm going to afford this baby, or I've already got 5 kids. What am I going to do with another one? And those, the feelings that the parents had then can affect the fetus. And so it's really, really interesting. So we have a lot of people who will go back and do womb work. And then we also have a lot of people who go back to infancy. So like, you know, birth to like 12 months old. It's really, really interesting where we'll go back and we're essentially going back to that scene, the scene where they first felt this feeling. And it's really interesting from the standpoint of they will describe being in a crib or, you know, being in a playpen or being on the floor and describe a scene that happened with adults in the room around them. And obviously wow. they couldn't talk, right? And so it might be, you know, sometimes it's the parents fighting. Sometimes it's something that actually physically happened to the baby. There's a lot of really interesting things, you know, and that's why having all of these tools is helpful because you don't have to, like, you know, in talk therapy, and I'm not, you know, discounting talk therapy because I think it can be a really helpful modality and a useful piece of people's journeys, but it may not get you to, you know, complete resolution from the standpoint of when you were a baby, you couldn't talk through, you know, these things. They were things that were essentially like imprinted on you. And so we are trying to get to that initial sensitizing event and change what happened. We're trying to resolve it. And we do that. There's a lot of different modalities we use and bring in. So much of it is based on neuroscience. Like we do a lot of things that incorporate both sides of the brain. We bring all the senses. And there's lots of things that we're doing to make sure that we're working on all, you know, all parts of the brain and really trying to get deep into the subconscious to change what happened. So that essentially, you know, you are vibrating on one level when you had the trauma. If we can reverse what your brain, because your brain is so, it works very much in metaphors. So metaphors and like creativity, we bring that in. So if we can change your brain's perception of what happened, then you're vibrating at a different level, right? You're vibrating much higher. And so it's really interesting because I'll have people say, well, there as and this is like also as their identity changes, it's like, well, you know, I noticed that like I don't want to wear the same clothes, I don't want to listen to the same music, like everything in their world is changing because they are literally like up leveling. So it's really cool. And I can say the same for me. I mean, I have done, I can't even tell you how many sessions I've had, like when I before I was practicing with other people, I'd had like 14 or 15 sessions on myself, and then I've been doing it for years after that. And it's like whenever I feel stuff coming on or I feel triggered, I go after it. I do the work. And it's really interesting because I find that I am not as triggered anymore. I'm not like I had, you know, either friends or family that would trigger me. They don't, it does not bother me anymore. This election that we just had in the United States, it was really, really interesting. I had a huge aha moment because normally the politics, I try to avoid the news and politics and that type of stuff just because it's been so divisive here in the United States. And yeah. I was not affected by the election at all. I was like, what is happening? It was so weird. I like, I did not care. I didn't turn on the TV. I didn't look at my phone. Because I don't watch the news anyways, but like, I legitimately just was like, whatever, it is what it is, because I know that in the end, I'm the one who has control over my, you know, the
absolutely
how I show up in the world, right? How I show up in the world and how I energetically influence other people, you know, how, you know, what am I bringing to the table? So it, that all of that external stuff didn't bother me at all. So it was so fascinating. And that's one of the things I have people do is like, what were your triggers? Do they still trigger you? It's a good way of kind of seeing where you are from like an emotional standpoint and just an energetic standpoint. And you'll find that the more you do this type of work, whatever modalities you're choosing, that you are more emotionally resilient and you can handle things like, and things just don't bother you because you realize that they aren't that important.
Wow. I mean, it sounds so powerful and like such deep, necessary work that most people don't do. And I think a lot of it is just because the information that this is even, one, necessary, two, available, and three, effective, is just, it's not really readily available to most people. And I mean, in doing this work with people, as you said, like these things become so deeply embedded within us genetically, chemically, molecularly. How difficult or, you know, how much work is necessary when you're working with your patients to get people to sort of relax into or open into a state where they can actually access these things on this much deeper level?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's really interesting because I think just having been a scientist from the get-go, I mean, I was a microbiologist before I went back in, you know, back to school to do this. My brain is always looking for trends. And in my practice, I've noticed a few things. The people who are kind of on the more creative side of things, they tend to be able to easily access, which is, it's not surprising at all because their brains are already very, you know, like, open and neuroplastic. And they also, part of being able to do any trauma work is making sure that your frontal lobe, you know, where your conscious mind is flexible. And also your nervous system is regulated. Because when you are in a state of stress or fight or flight, it shuts down your frontal lobe. It's literally looking for survival. It does not care about being creative or your trauma or any of that stuff. It's looking at, it wants to survive. And so once we get people out of that state, you know, we do a lot of nervous system regulation. That's why, you know, when I'm working with people, I try to gauge where they're at. Like, is this somebody who's going to be able to jump right in and like do the deep work? Or are we going to have to like essentially like reset their nervous system first and then move into the work? Because I'm always like, no matter what I'm doing with people, I always meet them where they're at. I'm never going to be like, this is what we're doing and this is how we do it. I always meet people where they're at. And for some people, it takes a little bit longer. And so, like I said, the creatives out there are a little bit more, you know, easier to get to rather than the analyticals like me. I know for me, probably the first three or four sessions I did, it seemed, I don't want to say, it was almost superficial. There was work being done because I could feel it. And I definitely felt it after the fact, because it's like, if you might be tired or yawn a lot or be a little thirsty, or, you know, suddenly have to like, it, like evacuate, whether it's, you know, bowel movements or, you know, urine, you know, it's, you could have to like let a lot of things go, literally. And so I experienced a lot of that at the beginning, but it wasn't until for me, it was like getting out of the conscious mind and analytical mind and like really getting into the creative side of things and the, just the flow. You know, we talk a lot about flow state in the world too, getting into flow state and getting into that space where you can access these amazing, you know, places in your mind and these tools. And then the other thing I've also noticed is, interestingly, because you would think the opposite would be true, this almost feels like counterintuitive, but people who've had some of the worst traumas in the world, I mean, I see people who have been sexually abused. I've seen, like, in many different ways, I see people who have been physically abused, like some really, really horrific things. They are so brave. Sometimes it's like sometimes this is like kind of their first foray into healing, but some of the other people have tried many other things and it hasn't like really, you know, it hasn't fully resolved it. They know, like me, it was like it moved the needle a lot, but didn't completely resolve it. And they want resolution. So they are going, they're doing the deep dives. They're ready to go. And it's fascinating to me because and I would say that's very much the rule, but there are exceptions. There are a few people who've been in that space and it's very hard for their minds, their subconscious, to let us in. But the vast majority of them are so brave and so just ready for change that we can jump right in. I find on the opposite side, where those of us, and I would include myself here, who had emotional, like, I'd say low-grade emotional issues growing up. So it would have been like, this is what I always tell patients, like a parent who was not necessarily there for you in the ways that you needed. You know, having to be more of an adult or a parent when you were a child, that's another space where a lot of trauma occurs. And it's not, most of the time, people are not aware of it until they're in their 20s, 30s, or 40s. They're like, oh, yeah, my parents shouldn't have done that to me. Or you were made fun of, or like bullied. And I always kind of like two categories of bully. Like, there's like extreme bullying that happens to people, but then there's just little ones, right? Where your friends kind of made fun of you, or like you were on the playground and, you know, you were picked last for a game and then you felt really, really bad about it and people were kind of making fun of you there. Like, those types of situations where those are little traumas that occur and then compound over your life. So those ones, I find people in that camp are not as willing to, or it's not as easy for them to go down the healing path to like really get into the subconscious. And I think part of it is identity, because those people for the longest time have identified as like, I'm fine. You know, I didn't really have trauma growing up. I had a great childhood. And I think so many of us want to believe that when it actually wasn't true. Right. And so for them, it's like, it's that that shift. Like, I mean, really what we're doing at a very deep level is changing beliefs, changing mindset, you know, changing all of these things, the identity. Those are all the things that we're changing. And, you know, for people who've had a more significant trauma, I think, I mean, they know this is something that happened to them and they want to get rid of it. Whereas for those, that other group of people, it's more of like that camp of realization of, oh my gosh, my life was not as perfect, or storybook, you know, that image that so often today we want to project. You know, social media is like the perfect example of it. Everyone tries to put, you know, perfection out there rather than showing up authentically as themselves. And I'd say that, you know, the more you do this work too, the more authentically you show up in the world, because I always thought I was doing that. And then the more I did this work, I was like, huh, there's little things that I was probably holding back that I don't do anymore.
And as somebody facilitating this work, as much as you're a scientist and a critical thinker, it sounds like it's also very intuitive, and you're using your intuition as far as sensing what the person you're working with is needing. So how, I mean, you spoke about this just now a little bit, but how has this changed you or shaped how you show up in the world?
Yeah, I will say this, like the more and more I do this work, it's lacking judgment of other people, because you never know what somebody else is going through at all. And that's something I always try to remind everyone around me of, and the people I work with, and even like on my podcast and my anything on social media, is like, it's so easy to judge somebody else, especially if they're doing something that's annoying you or bothering you or triggering you, right? Like the person who's driving really slow in front of you, or the person who, you know, kind of cuts you off, or like driving is a good example, because I find a lot of people are triggered when driving, or you're so overwhelmed that, you know, you yourself can't drive. Like I find a lot of people have anxiety in the car, and then it prevents them from actually driving, you know, at a normal speed. Because sometimes you'll find people going like on the highway here, like really, really, really slow, you know, and it's obviously causing an issue. But that person might be under so much stress and so fearful. It's like, it's, we have to remember that, and then like meet people with kindness. And so, and just an openness. Like I've always been a person who has been able to see, you know, all the sides of the coin, you know, all of that, and like the colors in between. I'm like, the world is not black and white. It is very, very gray. Like I've always been able to see that, but I feel like I'm like that now, kind of like on steroids, because I'm not meeting people with judgment. I'm meeting people with a curious and compassionate heart. And it's just, I feel like that's the essence of who I've always been. I mean, it's funny to talk to like my friends from like grade school, because they'll be like, you've always been like just very open-minded and flexible. Like I remember my friend saying that to me when I was like in high school, and I was like, what? And then now I look back on that and I'm like, I get it. You know, I really get it. Like I have always been that way. So I feel like this, I've been on this pathway. Obviously we know in the, you know, kind of the divine and the spiritual realm that a lot of times the story and the trajectory is there, and it does not always show up or manifest the way that we think it's going to. Because like I said, if you had asked like 15 or 16 year old me if this is where I would be today, she would have been like, hell no. She would have thought I was crazy. I know that.
Totally.
But it's like, you know, life experiences, right? And so it's just interesting how, like, you know, you start off in one place and then you end up, you know, somewhere completely different, but it was the same thing all along. It's just a different expression of it. And so I would say, especially when I'm working with people, like here's a good example. Like next week we have Thanksgiving here in the United States, and my kids have a week off of school, and I am still doing one day that week, I'm going to be doing some trauma and, you know, trauma work, HMT sessions that I told my husband, because he does not have that day off. I'm like, I need you to take that day off so that I can have the space, you know, because I work from home largely, you know, have the space and create that safe container for the people that I work with, because even just hearing somebody walk up the stairs or open a refrigerator breaks your concentration. Mm-hmm. And I won't let that happen when I'm working with somebody. So it's really funny. I'm like, you need to take our kids. And I need, because I've got a 7-year-old and an almost 12-year-old. And I'm just like, I know that, well, they can, you know, be good. I really need to have a certain environment to facilitate what's happening. And so Right. It's just, it's really interesting because before I may not have done that. I probably would have just been like, oh, I'll go to my, you know, office that's upstairs. But I don't want anything to interrupt that. Like, it's such a precious and important process. So I'm just mm-hmm. like, that's what I told my husband. I'm like, you need to take the day off because I'm seeing people. Because I didn't want to take that week off and get people. There are certain, like a lot of people I work with will do, like packages of sessions. And I'm like, I want them to keep making progress. I don't want to stop because, you know, we have this holiday coming up.
Mm-hmm. And with the people who come to see you, do they generally come to you initially because they're dealing with something on a more physical level, like something more physically detrimental to their health, and then you are able to kind of see that this is maybe a pathway to get to that underlying cause of whatever is physically showing up for them?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really interesting that you asked this because I feel like this has also been a journey for me on how I approach, you know, the whole treatment process. Because when I first started learning and experiencing HMT, particularly for myself, I don't want to say half my brain was still very much in the kind of biochemistry world of functional medicine, but I still was thinking so many of the root causes are, you know, in the biochemical realm and that emotional and spiritual affected it. But the opposite is actually true. And I just, mm-hmm. I couldn't see it 4 years ago. And now 100% I see it. And so it's changed the way I practice because before I was doing like half, I don't want to say half and half. It was like my practice. I had my functional medicine patients and then I had my trauma patients. And so then I came to a place last year where I actually designed a program. And one is particularly geared for moms. And then there's another one just called Core Transformation that anyone can do. There's just a few different nuances when I'm working with moms. And so it's really interesting because I started doing those packages. And I had some of my existing patients who did them. And then I also had some new patients who did them. And the crazy, and it's not surprising, but it was mind-blowing for me at first. The people who actually do those programs get way better results and results faster because there is a total transformation happening than the people who just do functional medicine. People who just do trauma work, it's different too because they are addressing and what I see is like the most important piece of the puzzle. But it's like when you're working with both things together, and I don't even want to mm-hmm. say it's functional medicine in those programs. What it is just dialing in the important things in your life. So like your lifestyle stuff, it's a diet and movement and exposure to nature and sunlight and sleep, about the basic stuff. But a lot of the things that we just, you know, get into autopilot and don't pay attention to and realize how those are impacting our health. So when you get all of that stuff dialed in, it makes the trauma work and the emotional work and, you know, any of the energetic stuff that we're doing that much easier to access, but also, you know, implement in just for it to become, like I said before, like part of your identity and allow those shifts to change and occur. So it's really interesting because this year in my practice, for my existing patients, there's going to be the ability to have like the one-off functional medicine sessions or even the one-off trauma sessions. But everyone who's new, I'm going to be doing the programs with just because it's what works, you know, it's where I'm seeing profound change rather than like we talked about before, like I feel better, I'm asymptomatic, but I'm not, you know, thriving in my life. They don't have the you know, they've gotten a little bit more biochemical resilience and maybe a little bit of emotional resilience, but I think most of us would like to have a lot of, you know, biochemical and emotional resilience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, with just where medicine is sort of heading conventionally, more and more people are looking for like this more holistic approach to healing, where they are seeing it as a total being rather than just really having like these physical modalities applied in different ways. You know, like there's surgical interventions, pharmaceutical interventions, different types of physical manipulation. And like, although all of those things have effects, they really look at the physical aspects of who we are rather than the holistic aspects of who we are. Yeah. And like, that's the really exciting, beautiful part of what you're discussing, is that you are weaving those things together and you're seeing that they actually, it doesn't make sense to separate them the way that we have. And I think being a practitioner where you've done both, and I'll say that for myself as well, like I've separated those two things for a long time. I've brought them together as well. And seeing that, you know, when you practice in a way where you kind of merge the physical, the emotional, the spiritual, that's where you really start to see people blooming into like who they really are supposed to be, the changes that you'd really hope for them to make. And so it's really so cool that you do this on a daily basis, and you have kind of like walked people through a very probably physical, you know, maybe reductionistic approach to their healing, and sort of like opened up this whole world of emotional and energetic and spiritual work for them. So in doing that, do you have...
It's funny that you use that language, because that's exactly what I say so often.
Oh, Stephanie, I think there's maybe a lag. Can you hear me?
Hey, Nirvani, I think that you're on a delay. Right now, your screen is frozen on my end.
Yeah, you as well. Okay. Let me just see here.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Oh. Yeah, I'm just going
to... There is. There's a delay. Yeah, you were frozen on my end.
Okay, and I think we still might have it. Let me try this. Can you hear me now?
Let me see here. Yeah, I can. Oh, now you're frozen again. Oh, there you are.
Okay, can you hear me?
I can. I see you moving a little bit. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you're lagging. Like, your video is lagging, but I can hear you now.
Okay. The same with you.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure.
So annoying.
It's so annoying. I plugged my computer in, but my battery's not it's not dead. So that's weird. But yeah, that's okay. Well, I'll just get them to edit that out. But is this okay now? Like, can you hear me now?
Yeah, we're perfect. We're back in sync again.
Okay, awesome. I think you were talking about what part did you hear me say?
A lot of it was choppy. What I did hear you say clearly was that part about it being reductionist, and I started commenting on that, and then it started cutting in and out.
Okay. Well, yeah, if you want to pick up at that point, I think that was near the end of what I was saying.
Okay. All right. Perfect. Okay. So It's really interesting that you mention reductionism, because I feel like, you know, that's the crux of so much of our society. It's like medicine is so reductionist. So are many forms of religion, and I would say not as much in the spiritual realm, but sometimes a little bit. We're always looking, you know, for like the lowest common denominator, when I feel like we should be more expansive instead of, you know, being reductionistic. And that's where, like, even when we're on, when we're doing like the, you know, kind of, when we're in there doing the emotional and trauma work, a huge part of what we're trying to do is improve your access to the divine, you know, whatever you want to call it, the divine spirit, God, you know, the universe, whatever it is. Because when you open up to that, and you really, like, when at the beginning, when we're doing the heart brain coherence, and you feel that in your heart, like, that is, it's so incredibly transformative. It changes you in that moment on a physiological and biochemical level, but it also changes how you are energetically vibrating and your energy signature. Like, they've actually done studies, you know, Joe Dispenza has done studies where people are doing this, and they can see how this, you kind of start off cold, and then as you do more of this, your energy field opens up, but it also gets warmer and more expansive. And that's what we're trying to do. Like, we're really trying to improve your access to the divine, or the universe, or God, or spirit, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, that oneness, that energy that connects every living thing, you know, on Earth and in the universe. So it's like, we're really trying to get, and that's expansive and, you know, vitalistic. It's not reductionistic. And so a lot of it is also kind of changing people's minds and opening them up to the idea that this can be involved in your healing process too, if you allow for it.
And do you see a shift in people who maybe are not even aware or necessarily particularly open to that, opening up to the idea that they are more than just, you know, this physical being here? Like, there is something deeper. Yeah. There is something, you know, universally connected that makes their life, you know, integrated with universal force or God or source, or, you know, as you said, any of those that you can kind of resonate with.
Right. Yes, they do. It's really fascinating, because I will have some people who come to me and they're like, I think sometimes the perception is that if you do this work, like, you don't believe in God. I'm like, I believe in God. I just believe in God as this, like, expansive concept, rather than, like, the God that was put in the box of, like, whatever XYZ religion, you know, or paradigm. I believe in it as this big expansive piece. And so they'll say, like, you know, I am, you know, whatever religion, and I, you know, like, there's a lot of walls. Let's just put, there's a lot of walls up there. And they're like, well, I believe in God, and I believe in this, I believe in that. And I'm like, that's great. That's awesome, because we can work with that. But as they go through this process, they do open up so much more. It's really fascinating. We talked about that, like, kind of identity change, and just being more, like, showing up as more kind, loving, compassionate, less judgment in the world. And so there's that shift. But then I also have the I've had the shift of people who probably were raised with some type of religion and then got away from it. And they, it's really interesting, because then as we go through this work, they'll say, like, I've had moments and I know that, you know, God was with me, or, you know, spirit was with me. And it was, it's so cool to watch people experience that, because they, it is, it's like, it is a shift that happens inside of you. And, you know, I've had people who are, you know, considered themselves atheist move to that place. I've had people who were, like, questioning of anything spiritual and religious because of what happened to them in their childhood, move to that place too. So it's really cool to see people just transform and evolve and become like a, you know, better version of themselves. And it's really interesting because that's when people ask what I do, that's what I say. I'm like, I usually say women because the vast majority of people I work with are women, but I'm like, I help women, you know, transform into the person they deserve to be. Because so often it's those limitations that we have in our own minds of, you know, the beliefs and the mindset that prevent us from getting there. And it's like, once we can get past all of that, you know, it's you're almost limitless.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that word. Like the idea that we have so much potential and, you know, it's really like these blocks that we put up that get placed in front of us and we don't clear. And when you start to, you know, bring awareness to that, there's like this whole other aspect of your life and of reality that opens up to you and of yourself, like of who you can become and, as you said, who you deserve to be. So that is just so powerful for all of us to realize. And I think that you're allowing that connection to open up for people, which is like, you know, that is such special, deep work and like amazing that you have the ability to facilitate that for people.
Yeah, it's so like people will ask me because they know I have a lot of tools for practicing from like almost 20 years now. And they if you could only have one thing, what would you keep? And I'm like, I would totally keep like all of the emotional and trauma work, you know, like what I kind of package into HMT, but there's a lot of different things I do in there. That's what I would keep because that is, you know, where the real healing and transformation come from. You know, it's like, the all of the lifestyle and functional medicine and all of that training is great, but that's, you know, I would be keeping the HMT because it's amazing.
So having said that, do you find that there are cases where, you know, you're doing this work with people and they don't necessarily change a whole lot of other physical aspects of their life, like don't necessarily redirect their diet or exercise or physical environment, but come to work with you and still get a benefit from doing this emotional work without?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, like I said, so much of it comes back to like that identity shift. And just I'll give you an example. Like for the vast majority of my career, I've seen a lot of people in the autoimmune realm. And there, we've known for a long time that there are certain personality traits in autoimmunity that it really kind of sets the stage and lays the groundwork for you to, you know, because genetically, we know that genetics plays a huge role in autoimmunity, but it's what is happening with gene expression. And your identity really influences gene expression. And so that's like back in the day, I forget how many years ago, I want to say it was probably 9 years ago now, a friend of mine, Dr. Keisha Ewers, she published a book called Solving the Autoimmune Puzzle. And the missing piece of the puzzle was trauma. And when you get to the crux of trauma, it's like trauma and identity. So it's like, how can we shift that such that we're not, you know, really manifesting and embodying this like autoimmune personality anymore? And that's like, that is a huge piece of the puzzle. So sometimes people will come to me and they're like, I just want to work on, you know, the emotional side of things. And that's great. I love that too. And so if they just want to work on the emotional and traumatic side of things, yes, they do have changes. Like I've had people whose antibodies have decreased and gone away. I've had people who they're just the symptoms, the overall, because autoimmunity is so often global in the symptoms. The symptoms reduce and go away. So it's really, really interesting. I mean, you can, like I said, it's like there's no right or wrong way to do any of this. It's always about meeting people where they're at. I actually think that, like I said, I think that the emotional work is the most powerful on all of this. But if you haven't addressed like your diet or your lifestyle, I mean, that just helps. It helps it, you know, move along just a little bit faster and kind of lays the groundwork. I always talk about that as the foundation.
Yeah. And I mean, as you said earlier, it probably, even if someone isn't initially open to that or all that interested in it, as you change who you are and how you feel, it probably naturally starts to happen where you also change aspects of your life to match who you are now.
Yeah, because they finally believe they deserve it, right? So much of it is not believing you're worthy or not deserving of something, you know, on a subconscious level. And then they finally are like, I deserve this. I deserve to feed my body with really healthy food, and I deserve to move my body and deserve to get outside, you know, in the sunlight every single day. It's like they really transform and realize, like, that they themselves as a person are important and deserve everything that they often are doing for other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that idea that we, you know, we're energetic beings here and we do express ourselves physically and we have a physical form and we get feedback in that way. But, you know, genetically, we emanate a frequency. I mean, our DNA is a receiver and a transmitter, like far beyond the molecular makeup of what our genetics is. And when you are literally vibrating at a different level, at a different frequency, it can't help that but change how everything within you starts to function as well. And that also has chemical effects and, you know, ultimately physical effects on the greater scale. But it's just so interesting to hear your work and that you get to see that almost in real time with people because you're working with them closely to really make big shifts in their paradigms, their mindsets, and then how that presents itself on a physical, at a physical perspective. So it's really empowering, actually, the work that you're doing and how you're approaching things with people. And it's super exciting because your philosophy around all of this, and you have tons of skill in a lot of areas that you can draw from, but your ultimate philosophy in helping people heal is it's really aligned with, you know, the beliefs I hold as well. So it's just so nice and exciting, honestly, to hear you be able to speak about these things.
I know. Likewise. Same. Like, it's so nice to talk to somebody who like really gets it, because the thing that I pose to other clinicians and practitioners, I'm like, think about, like, we always talk about, you know, biochemistry, and like, you really need to get deeper, get into the biophysics and then even the quantum physics of it, because that's like, again, like the biochemistry, I feel like it's both reductionist, but it's also limiting, because you're not, you know, a lot of people didn't have to take biophysics, but that for me, like, was like, I felt like organic chemistry and biophysics were kind of the two things that made the world kind of make sense to me. And I didn't know, because like, I have been a follower of quantum physics since I was in high school. And I didn't realize how much it would come into my world and my practice. That's crazy. Like, when you, you know, when you get out of like that Newtonian model and you get into the quantum model and you apply your knowledge of, you know, just all the things that we learn in school, biochemistry, anatomy, physiology, all of that, it really does shift that paradigm, and you can see the world and healing happening in a very different way. So it's like a lot, it's like synthesizing that information. And like I said, I'm like, I keep on, like, it's for me, it's like kind of a constant evolution of those ideas, right? Because like I said before, like probably 4 or 5 years ago, I would have been like still of like leaning in the camp of like biochemistry. But then I started looking at all of this and all of the books I've read over time and the work of other, you know, doctors like Joe Dispenza and Bruce Lipton and some of the other kind of pioneers in this realm. Candace Pert, like her Molecules of Emotion, all of that. So all of that work is like foundational to where we, you know, where we are now to be able to facilitate, you know, the type of work that I'm doing. So it's like, it's really interesting. So I always like keep, like I said before, kind of like a flexible and open mind to how all of the knowledge is being applied and understood.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that that is probably the healthiest perspective to take when you're involved with practice and dealing with patients, because, you know, from anyone who has gone to a conventional Western medical school of some kind, you end up with these very dogmatic practices that you so can dogmatic, choose to use. And I think just, you know, having the flexibility in your mind, in your heart, and in your practice ultimately to fuse other ideas into it, that's like where you really start to see that your influence on other people is, it goes beyond what you are physically doing to them. And it's really, it takes more of like a facilitator role in that you hold a space and you have different tools, and a lot of it can be science-based, and there is something so valuable and concrete in that. But beyond that, we hold this space for people to start to access different parts of themselves. And that, I think, is where medicine is going. Like, it's taking its time to get there, but there are people who realize that, you know, as a practitioner in this realm, it has to be more flexible, and we have to really get into that idea of what is the space that we're creating for people. And I mean, as you mentioned earlier, you really hold your space almost sacred for your the work that you're doing when you're working with people. And like, that is, that's so important, because there is a frequency to that. And people, you know, as much as the setting itself is very important, the intention that you bring to it is just as important, as well as what they bring.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's like, before I get, before I prepare for sessions, that's what I do. I clear the space that I'm in. I clear myself, and then I prepare, like I prepare the space energetically for the work that we're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And you had mentioned earlier, we had so many interesting things to talk about. So it's something that I wanted to come back to, but just something that you said about the language that you use in being able to not identify or label yourself as, you know, someone with Lyme, you had said earlier. But do you want to go into just a little bit about how you sort of craft those sentences or that mindset that you used, so that you can not necessarily identify with any particular label?
Yeah. So I'm really, this is something that's kind of evolved too. And I even like with my kids, I say this stuff to them, and like, your words are so incredibly powerful. And so instead of saying like, I have Lyme, or I have like, my son has ADD, I'm like, you could say I'm living with Lyme, or I'm living with ADD. So it's not like defining you. I think the words are really, really powerful. Or sometimes even saying like, I had it in the past, because I think we're so, especially when you're still, and like we talked about, you touched on the dogma of like science and, you know, medicine and all of that. They're like, oh, well, autoimmunity never goes away. Like, and I'm like, okay, so put the, you know, terminology as you want, like put it in remission. But I know for myself, I haven't had Hashimoto's antibodies in, I think, like, let's see, how old is my daughter? She's 7. So I haven't had antibodies in like 8 or 9 years. And a lot of it was, that's when I was kind of more, I was a little bit earlier on, probably like in the middle of my own, I'd say, spiritual and emotional journey. You know, I had done like a lot of the work, like I had mentioned before. I had even done some things. There was this one called QNRT, which is quantum neuro reset technique. And it's similar to what we do, but it's a very much, it's abbreviated. It doesn't touch nearly what we're doing, but it was one of those things that I was like, well, this is really cool. That I actually was doing it when I was pregnant with my daughter. And it was cool because it was because I had already been doing all the things, you know, all of the, you know, I'd done functional medicine protocols and changed my diet and all of those things. Because after I'd had my son was when the Lyme situation happened, and I was definitely affected by it. But when I started doing all of this other work, I'm like, oh, I'm feeling really good. I'm like, and you know, the symptoms were just not there anymore. And it was funny because the practitioner that I was working with, he wasn't even really addressing the Lyme, like per se. Like he knew it was there. He was doing his stuff, and it was amazing. And at the time I was like, what crazy, like amazingness is this? But then that's again, it kind of like piqued my interest into like diving into what's happening there. And that's, you know, like I said, that was probably 8 years ago. My daughter's 7. And then I started in with the HMT stuff about 4 years ago. So, you know, I was getting there. I wasn't quite there yet. But yeah, it's really, really interesting. You know, again, kind of like the journey and how we get there and the, you know, avoiding the labels, like the labels, like I actually did one of my own podcasts about this last week, because I just see so many people who walk in the door and they're like, I have this, you know, this is me. It's yes. Like, if you are defining yourself as that, that's the little box that you're going to be in. And it's a hard box to get out of. So it's like, you know, shifting the mind and shifting the identity. And then they realize they're like, oh yeah, it's like, it's literally a self-limitation we're placing on ourselves. And I'm like, we need to, you know, move through that stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, to what you were saying earlier, like our brains don't allow, depending on that self-identity that we've created, our brains don't allow certain information to really penetrate, and then you just can't get the changes that, you know, you say you want, but on a deeper energetic, emotional, spiritual level, it just doesn't happen. Like you can't just flip that switch when, you know, you're sort of saying one thing and feeling another thing.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You have to be in alignment. Everything, like your life will be so much better when your identity and how you feel and what you're resonating and vibrating, that level that you're resonating and vibrating at are all in alignment. Then your life becomes so, so, so much better. And the people who've done the work deeply really, really get that. And that's, you know, the whole point of why I did that podcast was because I have a handful of people in my practice who have been doing the functional medicine stuff for a long, long time, and they're not moving forward like they should be. And I was like, we've done all of the things. We've done the labs. We've done the protocols. We've done all of the lifestyle things. And you aren't first of all, they're either not getting to where they want to be, or they are stuck. You know, they're stuck in a place. Like they just, you know they need to change their diet so their triglycerides go down, but they're like, they can't. Like, I know I need to do it. They'll start to do all the right things and then it stops. They start and they stop. And then I'm like, this is what you need to do. So it was like, I wanted to educate people on that process and why that happens. It's like, it is literally that lack of resonance or alignment in what you consciously want with what your identity, like, you know, kind of physically, emotionally, spiritually is.
Right. And do you have any advice for anyone who feels like, you know, this is something that could be helpful to them, but still can't get past that idea that there are maybe more, like there's more of a physical approach that they need to exhaust before looking at the emotional or the energetic components of health? Like, do you have a message speaking to that and the importance of that piece of healing?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's like, again, it's like kind of when I do discovery calls with people to see, A, if I'm a good fit for them and they're a good fit for my practice. But, you know, can I help them achieve their goals? And that's, you know, that is what we're looking at. Like, I'm assessing, like, is this person able and ready to go down this path? And if they're not, like, what are we going to do? So I do. That's like a huge piece of what I do, is kind of like assessing and meeting people where they're at. But we have conversations. We have conversations about this stuff. And sometimes in those conversations, people, like, they get it and they're like, oh, mm-hmm. I need to do that. And when before they thought it was something more physical. But then there are some people who are like, yeah, maybe I'll be, you know, maybe I'll do that down the road or in a little while. And that's one of those things. I'm like, if I'm the right person for them, I'm like, great, let's move on. But if I know I'm not, I do refer people to, like, I have been practicing for so long. I know so many other people that do things that might be more what we would consider like in the physical realm, like certain specialties, like within functional medicine, or maybe it's like acupuncture or another kind of modality. Like, there's so many different modalities out there. And I'll be like, hey, start off with this first. And then when you're ready, come back and see me. I'm like, I said, I've been practicing for so long. Like, I just really want to help people on their journeys. And I know that I have a certain, you know, set of tools, and I have certain gifts, and those are what I use in practice. And it might not be what somebody needs at that moment, but I do. Like, I will tell people sometimes, like, I don't think you're ready for this, but come back mm-hmm. to me when you are. And by and large, I would say 90% of those people come back, like, within 6 months to a year, which is always fascinating for me, because it's, again, it's kind of like assessing their readiness, like, how ready are they for, you know, whatever we're going to be doing? And they're kind of like that conscious awareness too.
Yeah. And I think just bringing attention to something that maybe, you know, a light has never been shone on before. You know, that's half of it, is, you know, bringing that awareness in.
Oh, 100%. So often people say to me, they're like, no one's ever said that to me before, or they've never put it into that context, right? So it's pretty cool when you have that role, because I always remind people that doctor means teacher in Latin. I'm like, that's what we're supposed to be doing. And we've gotten so far away from that.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, Stephanie, I want to be respectful of your time today. So, I mean, I would say to you that this was amazing. Like, you just had so much to share, and you've been doing it for a long time, and you've done a lot in that time. So that really shows up in your conversation about it. And so I just want to thank you for that, and being so open and really just generous with your ability to share your experience in your practice and working with people. Is there anything that you would like to share before we wrap up today?
Sure. Yeah. If anyone is interested in the work that I do, you can find me online. My website is just drstephaniedavis.com. It's drstephaniedavis.com. And then I also have my Instagram is at Thrive Mama Tribe. I have a Facebook group of the same name. That's where you'll find a lot of, like, actually, you know, information about the work that I do. And then, yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of, like, resources and tools in there. I will, like, lots of times I'll pop into, like, the Facebook group or on Instagram and record little, like, reels or videos of, like, just little things you can do in the moment to help you, like, say you're, like, really, really stressed out. Like, it'll be, like, a tool, like, we'll do some breathing techniques, or, like, I did, like, a guided, like, heart math one day. I was literally sitting in the car waiting for my kids to get out of school. And I'm like, it'd be a good opportunity to, you know, put something out there. So people, like, I really want to bring practical tips and tools for people's lives as well. Like, that's a lot of what I focus on. And, like, in my podcast as well, that's what we're looking at. Like, I want to shine the light on a lot of information and people, but also give people resources and tools. Like, what can they practically use the next, you know, day or that day? So that's all my information. There's a lot of free resources out there. So yeah.
Yeah, well, thank you and much appreciated, like everything that you put out and the work that you're doing. And we'll link everything in the show notes from this episode. But yeah, I just have a lot of gratitude. I'm really glad we got to do this. We got to connect, and you have a wealth of knowledge. So it's so cool to have this discussion with you. Thank you.
Aww. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And I'm so grateful for you having me on today.